Welcome to the third episode of the Holistic Matters podcast series, Building a Healthy Lifestyle. I am Megan Hamrock, and today we're talking about the Whole Food Advantage. There is just one more episode in this season that we will release next Wednesday. All of our episodes will be available on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you missed either of our first two episodes, make sure to check those out to learn more about what it means to be healthy, setting realistic and sustainable goals, and why holistic health matters. For additional references and resources, go online to holisticmatters.com. We are joined again today by nutrition scientist Weston Bussler, and we're excited to talk about the Whole Food Advantage. Thanks for joining us again, Weston.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's just go ahead and dive in, and we're going to be talking a lot about whole foods throughout this podcast. So we want to talk about how whole foods do support healthy living. And with that, when we're talking about whole foods, what exactly are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about a food source that is coming from its more naturally occurring state, ones that haven't been fully isolated and then repackaged and put together.
Yes, exactly. So what does then a whole food entail?
Well, from a baseline, looking at the macro and micronutrients, this is one of the major components of a whole food. It's going to contain carbohydrates, many different types of carbohydrates. They can be starches, single sugars, all of these things complexed within the plants, as well fats that are in a form that when you get them, that's what they're like in the plant. They function. There's also the proteins, and proteins for living organisms, they're all about the enzymatic machinery. So all the different ways that these various amino acids have been arranged that they can perform biological functions on a daily basis. These are the types of proteins that you're consuming when you're consuming a whole food. As well, there's the essential vitamins and the essential minerals. These we know are the bare bones necessary components for human survival. Then there's additional components that affect health that are non-essential. One of the key groups of this is called phytonutrients. And phytonutrients are a lot of these molecules that range in between small and large that are often most concentrated in plants. And these are what the plants have actually evolved as a way to deal with their external stressors that they have and that they experience. So the stressors that these plants experience are going to be things such as sunlight, pests that are either large animals that consume them down to small microbes that can be some kind of an infection, be it a fungal or bacterial infection. Then in addition to that, there's cold stress, heat stress, everything. Plants have to produce molecules to defend themselves because plants actually, they're locked in. They're literally rooted in and they can't run away. So there's all these things have to be made by the plant to help deal with it. You have a class of plant compounds called flavonoids that are often seen as color-based molecules, and what you see is this is part of how they deal with sun damage. And what we know is that sometimes these phytonutrients that they're producing for themselves are actually helpful for humans too. So we co-evolved with these plants, figuring out ways to use them. There's, in a previous podcast, we covered holistic health and why that matters. We talked about the bitterness and of plants, the bitterness component of many of these plant molecules. And what we think that this had something to do with is the perception of bitterness. Our body evolved to think there could be some kind of potential poison. Now, in addition to that, we're seeing some potential secondary effects where how are those bitter perceptions affecting our blood glucose management and sugar uptake? So in ancient times, it was more important to say, don't eat this, it's going to kill you. Now, don't consume all of this. It's too much. It's more than what you need. So when you have the whole food matrix, all of these different things we've talked about, they're manufactured together in ways where your body's used to seeing. We've evolved to derive our nutrients from these whole food sources. We didn't get this way from having isolated sugars that we just that we consume, just an isolated sugar, that's it. No, those oftentimes sugars were complexed into what are called resistant starches, where they're not readily accessible by our first pass metabolism. They reach the lower GI, and then the colonic microbes, they wind up breaking that apart and releasing it, where then they produce all kinds of different metabolites in our lower GI, such as short-chain fatty acids, that we see associations to beneficial health effects from.
So the difference is that there are beneficial metabolites and nutrients present in whole foods that are not in processed food or isolated nutrients.
That's absolutely right. And oftentimes these processed food components, they're delivering what they're trying to deliver, be it carbohydrates, a specific single nutrient. They're bringing along with them some kind of filler so it can move through the system and be worked into whatever thing it's going into ultimately that we consume. And what you see with the whole food is you can use that as a way to package and deliver specific nutrients. So we know certain plants are very rich in particular nutrients or therapeutic components. But the second that you isolate that single one and take it away from that whole food matrix, you're leaving behind all of that original filler. Well, guess what? In plants, the filler is everything that we've talked about. The filler is the fiber. It's the different healthy fats, the protein that's in the exact components that your body's used to recognizing and utilizing. There's all this different filler that are these phytonutrients that are rich, strong antioxidant compounds that support synergistically the antioxidant vitamins in your body to ward off all kinds of different damaging effects that we exhibit from our own environment in the same way that plants use the same strategy, it seems like.
So if you don't mind, I say we just go ahead and dive into seeing what is in some of these crops that you keep referencing. And, you know, when we talk about all of the components that are represented, it seems like, yes, there will be a colorful presence. And this is something that we've put on Holistic Matters is the color of food. So, Weston, share with us some of the main crops that you've had a chance to work with here and tell us a bit about what's inside.
Looking at the color of plants, that is a really, really easy way to signify, oh, that's probably a nutrient-dense plant for a number of different reasons. And by no means is this excluding any one particular color, saying that those plants that are green, for instance, don't deliver phytonutrients and any sort of concentrated essential nutrients. That's actually not the case. The colors are all important because they help assure that you're getting this diverse diet that has all these different components that we know that are really good for health. So one of the examples I wanted to start with is one of my favorite plants and crops that I've seen and I love consuming is beetroot, red beetroot. It's a fantastic crop that you can just look at and see that deep red color in. It's one of the most vibrant and noticeable plant colors, so much so that it stains nearly everything that it touches. So anytime you're cooking with beetroots, it's getting everywhere, all over. But when you look at the compounds within beetroot that give it that color, the top of the list are what are called the betalains. And these include betanin and isobetanin. And these have been shown to have all sorts of antioxidants properties, as well as other biological effects that are going to be really helpful in a diet that includes all sorts of these other plants that these can stack from one another. The beetroot is also really interesting because when you compare it to other plants that are similar, you're going to be looking probably at these other roots and tubers. So potatoes, carrots, turnips, radish. One of the unique aspects of red beetroot is that it delivers a high concentration of phenolics on a gram weight basis. But in addition to that, it's also a very rich source of certain essential nutrients. And one of the primary ones that it delivers a high amount of is fiber. Dietary fiber is so necessary for ensuring regular bowel movements, as well as providing substrates that bacteria can use in the lower GI for growth. Then on top of that, folate, copper, manganese, iron, all sorts of different things in beetroot. A very similar crop to beetroot is Swiss chard. Swiss chard is actually shares the same genus and species as beets, both of them Beta vulgaris, just a different variety type of the two. The thing about Swiss chard, you're taking that top leafy portion only. That's what we're really thinking about when we're talking about Swiss chard. So this is a very unique source of dietary magnesium. It's very, very rich in magnesium, both as the plant itself as well as the juice from that plant. These whole foods are a great way to deliver that top-end nutrient, also bringing with it all sorts of antioxidant compounds such as lutein, zeaxanthin, beta-carotene, kempferol, myrcetin, quercetin. As well, there are going to be some of the betalains that were also found in beets. But this time, instead of coming from that root where they're highly concentrated, you have them coming from the stem. Another group of phytonutrient-dense plants are the cruciferous vegetables. And the cruciferous vegetables include things like kale, Brussels sprouts, as well as some types of radishes. Looking at these plants, one of the key components that ties them all together are the presence of certain phytoactives, specifically called glucosinolates. Glucosinolates are a very interesting compound that the plants themselves have developed for or as a way to ward off certain pests and invaders, as well as a way to signal to themselves that they need to heal following some kind of an injury. So what we see is that a glucosinolate is a sugar-bound small phytochemical that is physically separated from enzymes in the plants by the cell wall of the plant, that these enzymes are able to readily degrade very quickly, break down those small glucosinolate compounds into what are called isothiocyanates. These isothiocyanates have been associated with a lot of the bitter and pungent flavors that are found in the brassicas, as well as the rest of the cruciferous vegetables. Now, what you see with them from a health perspective is that these glucosinolates, particularly something like glucoraphanin, has been associated with upregulating phase 2 detox enzymes. When you hear about broccoli and these cruciferous vegetables and how they stimulate those detoxification pathways, that's what it's coming from. Now, in addition to this, that they're these plants are potent delivery mechanisms for the glucosinolates. They also wind up being a great way to get a lot of those essential nutrients. For instance, kale is a fantastic source of iron, vitamin K, manganese, calcium, and magnesium. So these are part of that filler I keep talking about, that filler that is beneficial for us. Now, something like Brussels sprouts is also a great source of glucosinolates, and for the most part, almost all of the essential nutrients that you'll see in kale, you'll also find in Brussels sprouts. Now, the difference is in a lot of the Brussels sprouts is how they're not this bulky, leafy vegetable. They're a really compact, small vegetable. So you get a more concentrated source of delivering something like fiber. And then you have other cruciferous vegetables like radishes. One particular radish variety that's very interesting is called Spanish black radish. And this is a radish derived from Spain that winds up having all sorts of the same glucosinolate class of compounds as Brussels sprouts and kale. However, this radish delivers a different type of glucosinolate profile. So where you're focused more on glucoraphacetin compared to other types of glucosinolates. Additionally, that black color in the name comes from these tannins in the plant that are a component of that outer layer. And this is a really interesting aspect where you relate that color of food, because you know that each of these colors is signifying something different. So those tannins are, it's a diverse class of phenolic compounds that can have all sorts of antioxidant and antimicrobial activities. So with the combination of them, oftentimes you get some benefits that you don't just get with one alone. The final group of crops I wanted to go into are what would be the cereals and pseudo-cereals. So one of the pseudo-cereals we have is called buckwheat. Buckwheat is a very interesting plant that grows readily throughout the world. Primarily, it's been found in China, India, but also grows all over in the wild in the United States. But the buckwheat plant produces a small fruit, and that small fruit is a what we call a pseudo cereal grain, and that can be used as you would some other grains. So it's a source of gluten-free, highly dense calories as a grain. But in addition to that, the plant itself that grows that pseudo cereal is a very rich delivery source for all sorts of phenolic compounds and phytonutrients. Specifically, it's a great source of rutin, which is a quercetin flavonoid. So rutin and quercetin are both found in buckwheat, with rutin being a specific type of quercetin bound to a sugar. And this is one of the highest sources of that particular nutrient that we can find. Additionally, buckwheat grows in a range from bright white flowers to deep dark red. And this also goes throughout the stem. The stem can be either green to dark red. And the coloring coming from it is from anthocyanidins. And these are going to be the same type of compounds that you would find readily in things like grapes and blueberries. These normally berry-associated compounds are very rich in the plants of buckwheat. Buckwheat is also one of the best sources of a plant form of magnesium alongside something like Swiss chard. And then a true cereal grain to go along with these, oats. Oats are a really great source of fibers, particularly soluble fibers such as beta-glucan. Now, they also contain, depending on how it was processed, a whole oat, one where you don't separate the groat from the rest of the outer container of the plant, is going to also have a lot of those non-digestible bulking fibers that come from non-soluble fiber. In addition to this, oats are a great source of certain phytonutrients that are unique to oat. The avenanthamides are a type of phenolic acid in oats that aren't really found in any other species at this point. And they exhibit a strong antioxidant and anti-inflammatory activity, as well as a bitter perception. Now, there's multiple different types of these avenanthamides, and finding new varieties that are rich in avenanthamides is a really great, exciting new area of research. Now, in addition to this, oats have another exclusive group of compounds that are called evencosides. And these are a saponin that is exclusive to oat that has shown a lot of antifungal properties for the plant. So it's how the plant helps ward off certain fungi. But in addition to that, they are highly, highly bitter substances. So all of these together are part of that whole food matrix that can be used as a efficient way to deliver nutrients along with all the benefits that come with plants and or that all the benefits that come with whole foods.
And to think most people don't even think of oats past as a breakfast cereal. So this just, again, goes to show how much more there is to whole foods than really meets the eye. Whole foods have macro, micro, and phytonutrients, and we really do need all of this. So while processing strips away these important pieces, we need to include them in the diet, and Holistic Matters is a great place to find ways to support just that. And I hope you all will stay tuned for the last episode of Season 2 of the Holistic Matters podcast series, Building a Healthy Lifestyle, to be released next Wednesday. We'll be wrapping up the season, as well as talking about the importance of sleep, stress, and exercise in the context of holistic health. Remember, that's holistic with a W. You can subscribe to the Holistic Matters podcast series on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also go online to holisticmatters.com. See you next week. The music featured on today's episode is from the artist Lee Ruzevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License.